You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, 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 and welcome to the Locked On NFL Podcast. This is the national NFL flagship of the whole Locked On Podcast Network that brings you your team every day. And how about this? We're the number one local sports daily podcast network in the world now. We are buzzing. We are booming. I'm sure there's some new listeners. Please spread the word. And a huge reason we are booming is because a friend of mine, Mike Sando, who joins me every Thursday. Happy holidays to you and yours there, Mr. Sando.
Thank you, Matt. Good to be here again.
Absolutely. Happy holidays to all that are listening as well. The news of the day, it's Josh Gordon. A troubled young man with pretty obvious addiction issues that have gone on for a long time has left the Patriots. And what's your initial take on it?
Sad for him. You know, you sort of root for guys. I think we've gone from, you know, when guys get into trouble, being just completely negative on them and how could this guy screw it up, to realizing that football players aren't the only ones who have issues in their lives and have addiction issues and other just holes in their lives that, you know, lead them and us astray. So you hope initially, you know, you hope in the big picture that he can just get right. I mean, football is really not the number one concern here. It seems like he's been trying to give it a go. From a football standpoint, I do think it's pretty damaging for the Patriots. It shows, you know, the fact that they were willing to trade a fifth-round pick for him, given his issues, showed their level of desperation. I think we all see the end coming for Gronk here at some point, and he's not quite as explosive and as he's been, and they need someone on the outside. So it's a big blow, obviously, to him and to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep it just football, and really the topic of the week on this show has been, is the end near for the Patriots? Where are they as a team? And just Gordon alone is still a good player, but he's not what he once was, in my opinion. I mean, he was a really dynamic guy, and they don't have that on the outside, like you said. And when I was asked the other day, I mean, because, you know, I've been so focused on them because I'm just playing the Steelers, you know, are they done? And I said, well, I think Gronk is done. And that's like the first big pin to fall that could have a, you know, knocking down some other pins.
Yeah, absolutely. We remember last offseason that, you know, the story broke that Belichick was, you know, trying to trade him to Detroit. And Gronkowski had said basically he'll retire if that happens. Well, there's no one who knows how close Gronk is to the end better than Belichick, right? I mean, he knows.
So
you know that's coming. And I agree. I don't think the whole dynasty's falling because I don't see a drop-off for Brady. And I think that if you give Bill Belichick an offseason to address what needs to be addressed, I think they can still be back. And as we'll see, you know, they're not the only team in the AFC or the NFL that's a contender that has issues. So
no.
I think what we are seeing, though, is it's unrealistic for them to just kick into their December gear like they have for so often in recent years and just be averaging 33 points a game or, you know, whatever, just lighting it up. That's not happening. It's going to be more of a grind for this team like it was against Pittsburgh last week.
Yes, and their road issues worry me. I think they're telling. I think that I would never question Brady and Belichick. I mean, they're the greatest duo that's ever done it, in my opinion. But if you're Brady and you're looking around the locker room and Gronk isn't there and you don't like taking hits quite as much as you used to, and maybe your plays dropped 5% or so, and you want to go spend time with your, I mean, maybe it's just, maybe he sees the end sooner than we think, and then look out. I mean, with Belichick and Brady, they're going to win the East.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible, and eventually that's obviously going to happen, but, you know, I think Brady's still a competitor. He's still playing well. You know, it's, if you walk away from the game, you'll never be playing well again in the future. You know what I mean? This is it. I mean, he doesn't know if he's got 1 year or three, but these are the only years he's got. Once you walk away, I think it's hard to walk away when you're still really great. And I think he's still, you know, a top five quarterback in the NFL. And when they've got enough weapons around him, he's probably one or two. So they don't have the weapons as good as they would like, but I still think that they're like you said, going to be winning that division and be contending. And so it would, I still think they're going to, you know, keep giving it a go, especially it seems like that Brady Belichick relationship stuff that was a big story this time last year doesn't seem to be, you know, dragging anything down. It seems like that may be patched up. Reload, reset. Now, they've had a lot of injuries, and maybe you can get it right next year. And they're still not out of it this year.
No, of course not. And they will be in the postseason, and they'll be hosting a game, and anyone can turn it up. And we are going to talk about some flaws about the contenders to finish up the show. I just don't see a lot of building blocks there. You know, like, it'd be nice if Chandler Jones was still there. You know what I mean? Like, I like Flowers, but he's a free agent after this year. McCourty's okay. Gilmore's, you know, but these guys aren't young. And I know they just had two first-round picks, but, you know, are they building blocks? We don't know. I mean, I just don't see a lot else in place.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And they've traded away and, you know, decided not to pay certain guys. And if Gronkowski is not in the picture for the future, that's a huge blow. I mean, that's, you know, when he's healthy, he's the most dynamic player on their team and top five in the league. So that is really difficult to replace. And that, you know, they've been trying to patch with Gordon, and now that's not going to work. So there's a lot to do for this team.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about DraftKings, but one other Gronkowski note here is, over the last couple of years, I've always said, with all respect to Beckham and Brown and Julio, Gronkowski's the hardest cover in the league. You know, there's just no answer.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Or was.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the nature... Like this is another discussion, but I think the dynamic tight end is better, is more valuable to you than the dynamic wide receiver, because you can use him in different ways, and you can use him sort of to dictate what defense is being played and what, you know... Is he going to be flexed out? Is he going to be an inline tight end? If the other team goes nickel or the other team goes base, you have options with a player like that, who's a, you know, really a rare breed nowadays. You know, as the big strong guy who can block and also, you know, a great receiver. So you can't almost overstate what that value is and how hard it is to find. They're just aren't players like that. Like you said, even a Beckham, every time Beckham comes out, he's a wide receiver.
Right, right. He's not a corner.
No one's like, shoot, we're in the wrong personnel because of him. You know, he's a, right. you know, now he's amazing, but that additional flexibility, and we've seen, you know, I think the Patriots have done a great job of this over the years. Even this, you know, the last couple of years, they've been the biggest 21 personnel team in the league, two backs, one tight end. That is the old school sort of West Coast offense, base offense. And in all of football, not just West Coast, that was the old base offense. Well, it's an 11 personnel league with three wide receivers, yet they still do that, and they do it because they split those backs out wide and they get mismatches against run-oriented defenses. And Gronkowski is a huge piece in that. They have been a huge team that, you know, even when they had Hernandez and Gronk, they would go two tight ends, but it was really like three wide receivers if they wanted it to be.
There's no answer. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no answer. They always have they always have you solved. And I think that's, you know, diminished. The effect of that is diminished right now.
Right. And of course, Brady orchestrates it all brilliantly. I mentioned DraftKings. I told you about them earlier in the week. Please go to my Twitter timeline, at WilliamsonNFL, and I've been posting a link of a contest I started there where you can do battle against me. I already have my lineup in. There's 20 slots available right now. It only costs you $3 to get in, and we can battle it out for this week's DraftKings, you know, Daily Fantasy. I'm also going to create one just for the Saturday games, and we only pick 6 guys, and I'll tell you more about that here now. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It's kind of the new wave of daily. So, you know, it's week 16 of the football season, and that means it's time for you, the time is running out to get into the action. I mean, every single game will matter with huge playoff implications at stake, which we're going to talk about here, and it can go a long way for you to win, you know, huge cash prizes. So single game fantasy football, and I'm going to do it just single day for Saturday, is the newest way to play one day fantasy kings, fantasy at DraftKings, the leader of one day fantasy football. You've been thinking about trying DraftKings, now is the time. DraftKings has taken fantasy football from just 1 week to just 1 game, making it easier to draft your lineup. You draft six players from a single football game, one captain and five other players. Your captain will earn 1.5 times the amount of points. You can go for value or for star power to anchor your lineup. It's that simple. Six players from one game. Just stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition, like myself. So, go to DraftKings.com or download the app. The app's really easy to use. Use the code LOCKEDON, all one word, all caps, to enter a single game contest for free this week with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON, all one word, only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. So there's a minimum of $5 deposit required, and eligibility restrictions apply, but see DraftKings.com for details. All right, Mike, I wanted to mention one, maybe the worst team, and then I wanted to talk a little bit more about the top teams. Arizona Cardinals. I had Mike Renner on yesterday, and he does offensive line ranks for Pro Football Focus, and the Cardinals were last. I mean, they have five replacement guys on their offensive line. I don't know how on earth you judge Rosen at this point. They do have some guys on defense, and I think David Johnson and, to a lesser degree, Kirk are building blocks. But this is a team that needs a lot. My questions I wanted to talk about them, though, are right now they have the number one pick. And unless they win the next 2 weeks, they're going to have that number one pick. And from what I understand, Bosa is the Myles Garrett this year, that he's the clear number one best prospect. Yep. But they have Chandler Jones. They could re-sign Orchard and, you know, be okay there. Do you take the best guy, or do you try to hold that pick for a ransom, even though he's not a quarterback? Like, how would you try to rebuild this mess?
Well, you know, if you look at the teams that are at the top, a lot of them already have quarterbacks.
True.
So they're not going to. But the trend has been in recent years that you trade that pick to somebody who needs their quarterback, right? So
right.
You start looking and say, hey, who's picking in the top 10 that could be in the market for a quarterback? And let's see what we can get from them. And so if you look at, like, you know, the Goff-Wentz draft, though, you know, that was Tennessee and Cleveland picking one and two. And they traded those picks, and, you know, those two teams, Tennessee and Cleveland, we can debate, you know, whether they should have taken quarterbacks or whatever, but they got good, you know, value. They got players, they got picks. And I think, you know, for Arizona, I would rather have I'd rather move down, still get maybe an elite defensive player, which it seems like a defensive draft, and get the picks that I need, plural, to address multiple areas, starting on the offensive line. And I think, you know, we've seen you can get, you know, is Nick Bosa going to help them, or four picks and two of them are starting offensive linemen and you still get in the second round, you know, a decent pass rusher, right?
Or
you know, interior guy or something. It's such a deep draft for D-line, according to everyone that I've talked to in the NFL, that you could still get a good player outside of the top pick, you know, like a really good player, maybe a Pro Bowl player. Mm-hmm. So to me, that has to be their strategy. I think what remains to be seen is, you know, what level of change are we going to see in their organization?
That was my next question.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, typically I don't think you just move on from a coach after 1 year, but the way everything's gone with the Steve Keim, you know, DUI in the summer, setting just a bad tone for everything. I think that and depending on what they told the owner, the expectations were going to be, makes that feel like, hey, you know, you could envision the owner saying, you know what, Kyle, let's just hit the reset. Let's start over with a coach GM combination. I'm not saying I don't have any information that they're going to do that, but I would have normally said that's not happening, but just under the circumstances, you could see that happening. So if that happens, then there's a whole bunch of utter questions. You know, hey, you're going to probably hire a coach and GM who hopefully like Rosen, right? I want to build around him. But there's a lot of questions to be answered on that front, just stability-wise.
Yeah, my thoughts on those two subjects are, I wouldn't fault them at all for blowing the whole thing up in terms of coaching staff and front office. They haven't drafted all that well to begin with, to be honest, too. And I haven't seen a lot from the staff to say, wow, these changes are really working out. And but my prerequisite for hiring a guy would be somebody that liked Rosen. You know, I mean,
yeah,
he give the guy a chance. I'm high on Rosen. Maybe I'm a little prejudiced that way because I feel like he has a chance to be very good and just hasn't had a chance to be yet.
Yeah.
But your draft conversation I thought was a good one. And it kind of dawned on me, if they could do something along the lines of what the Colts did last year, like, hey, we'll give you this first overall pick for Quentin Nelson and 3 2s. That's perfect for them. You know what I mean? Like a surefire, solid prospect and a bunch of twos that turn into Darius Leonard and those type of guys.
Oh, yeah. You get a couple offensive linemen and plug them in. Hopefully they start. You know, you get a receiver maybe, or, you know, somebody who can really, who knows if Larry Fitzgerald is going to play another year or whatever. But you need a young stud sort of, right? I mean, they've tried to do it with Michael Floyd and others in recent years and haven't really found that guy for whatever reason. They need that. I think that would really help Rosen, help the line. They've got the back, you know, a good young back. So it's not that far away from them being in maybe the middle, you know, 10 to 15 on offense instead of 33rd on offense, which they are now.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. The team they're playing this week, the Rams, have some issues. And here's my take on where they are. And it's worrisome. And the interior of their O-line is a problem. They're not using play action as much. I think Goff is feeling perceived pressure and not trusting what was a great offensive line. I don't know that Gurley's been healthy, and honestly, I might shut him down for a game or two. I think the lack of Cooper Kupp has hurt them because he's been that hot route guy, get it out quick guy, you know, and teams are playing a lot of cover four and taking away the big play and forcing the checkdowns, less play action. Not playing well on the road. The defense is flawed and built around big plays. And Goff flat out worries me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so they played 14 games. Their first 7 games, opposing offenses averaged 18 points a game. The last 7 games, it's 30. So right there, that changes the whole dynamic. I think they've had the system rigged. I'm not saying Jared Goff's not a good quarterback. I'm just saying it's been rigged to be the absolute best possible situation where your defense was playing well enough, you had those healthy contingent of weapons, and I think what we've seen in the NFL this year until recently is guys like Sean McVay have been just really skillfully manipulating the offense's advantages on first and second down when traditionally defenses are a little bit in their mindset, hey, let's stop the run, let's force them into third down. I think a lot of these offenses have been taking advantage of that, making big plays, avoiding third down altogether, right?
Yes.
And then with the Rams, they're, you know, you get ahead, and, man, it's just been functioning smoothly. And what we've seen recently is it feels like every play's third down for Goff lately.
Right.
You know, and
I excused it in Chicago.
Yeah, I did too, but I did too. I mean, you could chalk that up to saying, hey, they're playing a great defense in cold weather, you know, wasn't their day. But, God, there could have been another interception or two in that game. You know,
it was terrible.
Yeah, yeah, that happens sometimes, though. I mean, we've seen good quarterbacks have their bad days, you know, just in their own division. We've seen Russell Wilson have 4 and 5 pick games. You know, it happens. You're going to have that. But I think we're seeing, you know, more than that over a course of games, and, you know, losing at home to a Nick Foles Eagles team that seemed to be having all the fun, you know, when you just saw the body language and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, just a fun game for the Eagles, and it looked like misery for the Rams and Goff. Goff just, you're right. I don't know how many quarterbacks, there's a bigger difference between how great they look when they're protected and everything's going well versus when things are going poorly, man, all of a sudden you can convince yourself that Goff can't play. You know, and that's what we saw in 2016 when everything was horrible. He looked terrible. And when it's been great, man, I've had people compare him to Joe Montana with his accuracy, you know?
Right.
I mean, isn't it amazing the gap, the difference in what it can be? And, you know, what is sort of the truth?
And he's a very young man, and any young person, and, you know, is going to get more consistent as they age, I would think. But I think it was you and I talking just 1 week ago about Goff, and I use the term, he's a fair-weather quarterback. And I mean that figuratively and literally. You know, like, the conditions, you know, the weather better be good, or in LA, and times better be going good, because when the going gets rough, he packs it in right now.
A little bit, you know.
It's a little rough, but you know,
it's a little rough, but you know, I think so. Let's give Goff and the Rams tremendous credit for the reversal they've orchestrated over the past two seasons, right? I mean, it's one of the great reversals for an offense ever. So once we accept that, though, we say, okay, what's the next step? Can you win in the playoffs? And last year, they had an imperfect Atlanta team at home, and I thought once they couldn't score. You know, it felt like third down all over again. The big plays were taken away, and Goff just looked really ordinary after this amazing year. We're starting to see that again. What happens, you know, what's the sort of expectation with this team? What if they don't win a playoff game this year? You know, then you've gone 2 years where, man, you weren't able to get it in at the end. There's questions. Look at all the guys on defense, Marcus Peters and Ndamukong Suh, or Dante Fowler. Are they paying these guys realistically? You know, they're sort of all in to do something beyond
they're built for
what
now.
They did last year. You know, and they're not set up to where it's all going to crash down and they owe a bunch of money and they can't reload. That's not true. They haven't made decisions that compromise their future, but they're very much geared to maximize today, this year. So it's concerning to me that they don't look like they're going to do that now late in the year. And we'll see. Two more games. I mean, they could get it all right, but there are question marks there.
Yeah, and I mentioned some things crumbling around Goff. You know, no Cup. I don't think Gurley's as healthy as many let on. The Blythe and Sullivan are struggling on the interior. But don't you think Josh Rosen would change with him still, or 20 other quarterbacks? It's still pretty favorable conditions for a quarterback.
It is. But going to Chicago, who's looking good in that game? You know,
right.
I'll give him that. So yeah. I'm not ready to throw it all. You know, throw away all the progress and question him. But the questions I have are, what are they going to do in the playoffs? You know, and I think we would have been much more optimistic and penciled them in as at least going to play New Orleans in the championship round, then you don't feel that way as much now.
Yeah, we talked about New England to start the show. We just talked about the Rams. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to do kind of a lightning speed round to end the show of the fatal flaws of the, quote, top teams in the league. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. What worries you most about the Saints?
You know, I think offensively they've gone from being like in the Kansas City realm where they could put a 50-burger on somebody and send Philly home with, you know, tails between legs, where you feel like this is a truly elite dynamic offense. It doesn't feel as explosive. I don't know if it's just, you know, Dallas sort of exposing them and there's a blueprint. It just feels to me like, hey, they're a little bit more manageable. I know their offensive line has had some injuries, but hey, if you have a plan for Kamara, you got a corner who can at least run with Michael Thomas. I don't think they're scaring me as much on offense as they did. So that's a little bit of concern. Still a good team. They have not allowed more than 17 points in a game in any of their last six. That's totally unsaint-like from the past. So I think they got a lot going for them. They're probably going to have home field or at least be right in the mix for it. But, you know, you could see a situation where they play a Chicago in the playoffs and they're not scoring more than 17 points themselves. Then what? You know, they could lose. They look more vulnerable to me.
Oh, I 100% agree. And I've been analyzing them a lot because the Steelers are going to New Orleans. And I love Breeze. I love Kamara. I love Thomas. They really have no other weapons. I mean, and I know they manufacture things. Ingram's a good player. I mean, in the passing game.
Yeah.
I mean, those other guys, they don't have their Devery Henderson. They don't have their Ted Ginn, the field stretcher. They don't have a Colston. They don't have a tight end. You know, like, wow. I mean, there's only two dudes that are productive consistently, and they're great. And then you mentioned the O-line situation. If Unger and Armstead are out, that's a huge problem. I mean, that's going to have a massive ripple effect throughout that line. And I could see Hayward, Tuitt, Hargrave really making life tough on Breeze.
Absolutely. I think the Max Unger acquisition was just a great acquisition for them. And it's, you know, you live in Pittsburgh, I live in Seattle. So, you know, you're a little more familiar with the Steelers than other teams. And I feel that with Seattle. And even so, it didn't really dawn on me fully until I thought it through. You know, Max Unger's loss from Seattle's line really robbed leadership and the soul of their offense from them, and they have not recovered on the offensive line until maybe this year. I think the centers going to a center going to a team is a big deal. Like Alex Mack went, Rodney Hudson went to Oakland, and all, you know,
it's huge.
Those things really help. And I think for somebody like Breeze, who's just on top of everything, right? I mean, everything is calibrated to maximum efficiency for him to be a dominant elite producer at his age and his size, right?
No, for sure.
I mean, you got the play caller, all this. So a center is something we sort of take for granted, you know. Well, I mean, but no, I think
you
it's
really
an important.
Shouldn't.
I think it's a really important thing for the protections they have to do. I think the protection's a little different for him, right, because of his size and just the intricacies of their offense. So I think that's a big deal, and yeah, we need to watch the health of their offensive line. That could be their I think that is their Achilles, which. You know, for years we've said it's their defense, but it's kind of not their defense right now.
Right. And Pete might have to bounce to left tackle. You might be worse at three spots. The other guard spot's not great to begin with. All of a sudden, Ramchek's like the only legit starter. You know, it could be a big problem for them. Who's next? Pick somebody.
Chiefs.
It's got to be the run defense, right? I mean, if a team like Baltimore comes in there, kind of like the Titans did last year, and just... We keep scanning the Mahomes on the sideline, frustrated because they only have 20 minutes of possession.
Yes. I think, though, offensively, it feels like more of the load has shifted onto Mahomes, if that were even possible. But, you know, having Kareem Hunt out of there
is big.
Is a big deal. So he's not just, you know, sort of the engine of their running game. He's a great downfield threat, you know, an explosive playmaker down the field. So. I definitely see a little bit more, you know, they're still dynamic, but a little bit less dynamic. I looked this up. So they have allowed 140 points in their last four games.
Wow.
And are amazingly 2-2. They're actually +6 in point differential. And I went back and looked.
Tough recipe, though.
Yeah, I went over the last decade. They're the only team. You know, for this segment of the season, your 11th through 14th game, who has allowed anywhere close to that many points and is on the positive side offensively. My point just being, the margin for error was already a little low because of their defense. Now I think you really see it getting smaller because of no Kareem Hunt. Sammy Watkins has been banged up, hasn't been a big force. You know, we saw Tyreek Hill limp a little a couple games ago. You know, is he... all the way there? We're getting late in the year, right? It's getting to be tough. So, like, they still have the potential to go into Seattle and run away from them. You know, they can. They're a really explosive team. If they have a bye week and Andy Reid gets time to prepare, I mean, they can still be that team. But I just feel like I'm a little more nervous for them than I thought I was going to be, because no one saw the Kareem Hunt thing coming, right?
I think it's a really big deal. You know, four-minute offense, helping your defense. If you happen to run into rough weather at home in the AFC Championship game or whatever.
Just a big play every once in a while on a seam route or something that he can make is awesome for running back.
Yeah, and he's just a very good player. I kind of lump the Chargers and Steelers together because, to me, on paper, I don't see a lot of holes. But I don't know that either team is super trustworthy. You know, I mean, I think the Chargers are the better team of the two, although we saw them play just a couple weeks ago, and I know the Chargers won, but see, you know, Pittsburgh had that game in hand, and if it wasn't for a couple crazy plays, it probably doesn't get away from them. But they're both a little bit hard to trust.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with the Chargers, though, I trust them more than I have in the past. I mean, I just, you know, the types of games they... one, you know, they're behind at Pittsburgh and find a way to win. They're behind against the Chiefs, find a way to win. Go into Seattle and hold Wilson to 17 points and get a pick six off them. I mean, those are some pretty good quality wins, you know, for them. And I think they have been, you know, more of a complete team than they've been in the past. They check the box for things that I think are important, which is the potential for, you know, they've got the good quarterback who can win in 2 minutes. They have potential to be able to run the ball. They have a good pass rush rotation. They have some talent in other spots on their defense. I think a good defense overall. And then, you know, we've wondered about, you know, in the past, is their kicking game, you know, the special teams going to let them down? And I suppose that could happen. But guess what? That could happen to the Steelers and all these other teams too, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a little bit of a wild card. So I like them. I think, a couple months ago I was asked to pick somebody to be in the Super Bowl, and I think I had the Chargers beating the Saints. And I still probably might make that pick. You know, I think they're the two teams that have shown an ability to win a little bit on the road and have some of the key ingredients on both sides of the ball to do it.
Absolutely. Those would be my picks as well. Doesn't look like Keenan Allen's going to miss time. Gordon's coming back. So they're kind of clicking at the right time. Bosa's hitting the stride. I like where the Chargers are at.
I do too. You know, it's funny. I look at our overall offense, defense, special teams metrics at ESPN that are based on expected points, and the Chargers are still 32nd on special teams for the year. So they've got to play better than that. They can't have one of those 32, you know, ranked games in a playoff spot, because that can then be enough to cost you. So I think that's still something to take a look at. But overall, they are, you know, second on offense, seventh on defense. It's a pretty good spot to be in.
Yeah, it is. And so to make a Steelers note, because you kind of mentioned it about special teams, Boswell's basically been the worst kicker in the league this year. And he was a Pro Bowl kicker last year, signed a big contract. And I'm not even saying if he kicks at that level, the 2017 level, but if he even kicks at league average, the Steelers, I promise you, have two or three more wins. I mean, they don't tie the Browns. You know, they beat they win in Denver. There's two or three easy wins there just with average kicking.
Yep, that change our perception of the team and the massively angst among the fan base. You know, they are. So we've got them 22nd on special teams right now for the season. And sometimes it's felt worse than that because of those misses. But
Football Outsiders has them 32nd.
It's funny, you know, you always see, like, you know, offensive linemen, you know, you can just picture a Ross Tucker or those guys, you know, God, these special teams, man, it's just the kickers, they have way too much influence. But it's kind of it's sort of a cool component of the game. It's like, you can't plug all the holes in the dike, right? I mean, you're trying to hold these teams together, but there's always something that can go terribly awry unexpectedly or even expectedly. And the kicking game is one of those. I mean, you can just blow the game off of a guy who barely breaks a sweat during the game.
Yeah, and one other note with them too is they lead the league by a pretty wide margin in special teams penalties. I mean, that's a lot of hidden yardage on the field.
Yep. So definitely something to look for them, in addition to the occasional periodic Ben Roethlisberger interceptions.
Oh, yeah. And just, you know, he'll have a bad game or miss people. I guess that's a wrap. I mean, I was going to bring up the Bears, but I think it's Trubisky. And it's kind of a one-word answer is the thing that worries me there. Is he ready? Is the offense capable? But the defense is great.
Yeah, and they've been managing him really well.
Yeah, they have.
In the context of all of that. And we've seen that before with some of those really strong defensive teams. You know, to some degree, the Harbaugh 49ers, you know, were like that. So that's not a unique situation, and Baltimore's trying to do it too. It can be done. It's just hard to go all the way through.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Mike, that's a wrap, man. Good stuff. Happy holidays to all. And you and I will get together next Thursday. And I'm going to go to my bookie tomorrow and pick games. Sound good to you?
Great. Sounds good. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Take care.